Now just make sure, has the sheet for people to fill in the names actually gone round the room?
No.
Yeah. Who is it, who is it with now?
It's alright,
that's okay, that's fantastic.
If you're just on that sheet, will we get news about the 8th of October meeting?
Perhaps some people sort of who are interested, put their hands to show interest and perhaps maybe can speak to them at the end of the meeting. Yeah. Would that be okay?
I might not be able to for the end of the round.
Right. If it's okay, I will make sure that everybody gets information is on the email list.
Sorry, the thing hasn't come back up this way.
Right, can somebody send it back, back towards this side of the room? This side of the room down here. Who has it? Ursa, do you have it? The list of names, okay. It's gone down here, but not over this side, I think.
Oh, okay.
If anyone wants information about the policy on 8th of October, then perhaps your details are here with David perhaps at the end of the meeting. No, that's okay. Yeah, that's okay. Okay. I wanted to make a few suggestions about that, perhaps things that I have heard being discussed in those spaces. For example, the possibility of targeting MPs and other politicians for lobbying about autism matches is discussed, I think, on the bulletin that my and myself and Dan and Larry here are all on. There's also an idea of some kind of autistic pride march sometime next year, and also the possibility of organising a meeting at one of the major political parties' conferences, probably the Labour Party because they're the governing party, realistically for next year rather than this year. These are all suggestions that sort of come my way in one form or another. Of course, people shouldn't feel constrained to those subjects. Please feel free to comment on anything else you've heard tonight, or indeed anything relevant which is on your mind. But I throw those out just to sort of see if I can galvanise anything at all there. A few quick ground rules. Speakers will have 4 minutes to make their comments or questions. I'll knock on the table after 3 minutes and to indicate that they should finish off within the next minute. I'll be quite strict on this. Or if somebody has a communication problem because of their autism, then I will allow an extra minute to make your point. And if people could stand up and perhaps come to the front of the room and sort of face the rest of the crowd, because that way that we can make sure they're audible to everybody else, if that's okay. Although you don't have to, if you really feel... We should actually have a roving microphone, but we don't have one, unfortunately.
Questions on pieces of paper front.
Yeah, if people can actually... If people want perhaps to sort of do that also. There is actually paper over there, so if people don't want to speak, they can write a question on the actual paper instead. But if you want to stay in your seat, if you want to do that, and if you feel that coming up to the front is uncomfortable for you, but just make sure that you're heard by the room. That's all. Okay, I'll start with. Where to start?
No political speeches, please.
Well,
it is about politics, so we may.
But is it about something?
Can you adjust the microphone at all? Can that be done? No, you can't. Okay. Is that possible? That should be better. Don't speak. Leave it there and just speak into it just there. That's good enough. So just you only just speak.
It takes up quite a lot of time normally. It's fine.
It's a very small noise, you can dance, it's okay.
Just stand up normally, but no, just... Okay.
Yeah.
I think the microphones are okay, people have right. Okay.
We'll get there. Adrian Wyatt, and I'm a trustee of Radar, which is a Canada's organization, the largest one in the country.
See, it's been passed several
And it does have a majority on this board of disabled people, that has about 3/4. Now, in terms of political action, Radar actually...
It's charity, though, it's restricted, isn't it?
Larry,
please.
Radar actually provides a secretariat for the all-party parliamentary group on disability. And it is pledged to take forward the all-party parliamentary group, the Disability Rights Commission's three of them. There's learning disability, mental health, and neurodiversity and autism, the latter of which I'm a member of. In terms of other alliances, it's also worth noting that People First, for example, is a long-established organisation which has many members on the autistic spectrum and has a campaigning network, especially here in London. And that's why I pass those things around and put them out there. So I encourage you all to join. They're both free. Then on top of that, I have to comment that in terms of the actual organisation of this meeting and some of the comments, we've had some people who've mentioned, okay, the Direct Action Network, they are political, one of the speakers, but she didn't actually mention at all the fact that in this country we have the first official human rights attempt to actually include neurodiversity and autism through something like an action group in the world. And in addition to that, there are quite a number of user-led organisations which are not mentioned at all. There's no mention of the UK Council of Disabled People, no mention of People First.
Excuse me, I wasn't being comprehensive.
No, well, I'm sorry. This is part of the problem, because this is part of the problem.
Larry, wait. No, Larry, that's enough. Okay, can I please say that nobody should interrupt the speaker while they're speaking? Nobody. Until he's finished.
Yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
No one.
This is part of the problem. There's been a lack of sufficient connection with the wider disability movement.
Yeah, yeah.
And in order to do that, you have to acknowledge the work that has already gone on. And there hasn't been any acknowledgement of the organisations that have actually done it, and of the people who have done it.
Excuse me, but I didn't actually mention
it. Larry, you've got 1 minute. Okay.
Okay. And if we're going to take this thing forward, we've got to have, you know, a political committee who set up. I agree with Rob who said on that, but we also need to look, make sure that we do have links with these organisations as well.
We need allies.
No, but it also means, in some instances, actually joining these networks to help advance the cause. That doesn't mean by joining them that you remain uncritical of them. You should be critical of them because they don't do the right things. Because there certainly has been a hierarchy of impairments, and neurodiversity and autism have been right at the bottom of it. And I've experienced many disability organisations, and speaking here as somebody who's the chair of a residual body of a Greater London Action on Disability, that there's been an editing out of our specific demands from disability manifestos. So we do have to be highly critical of the wider disability movement and demand that they include our issues as well. They want our support.
Okay, could you wind
up? They need to include our issues every time.
Yeah, okay, thank you. Okay, yep, yes, I'll say, yep.
I believe we should try and get the National Autistic Society on our side, and the main reason for this, sorry, I'm Alexis Milne, also of Aspects of Asperger's. I believe we should try and get the Autistic Society on our side, and the main reason for that is they're concentrating on adult services this year. And one of the main problems that we have with getting set is social services bounces backwards and forwards from learning disability to mental health, and in the meantime they don't realise that we're getting worse. I'm sure a lot of you have had this problem as well. So they should stop doing it like a bouncing ball and treat us like people. We are people, we need help and we need it now. And the best way that we can get through to the campaigning side of the National Autistic Society is to email Chris Peach with our comments. I actually emailed him with an anonymous, he will do anonymous ones, so you can protect your identity, you don't have to say who you are. case study, and at the bottom of it I said, how many, this is what I aim to say to the National, to North Somerset Council, my local council, how many people have to end up in hospital with attempted suicide before you decide you need help? How many of us have to have more than one nervous breakdown, including our carers, before you decide we need help? How many people have to end up with mental health disorders associated, and then you decide you still don't need a psychiatrist before you need help? We are people, we need help, we need it now. And one of the few things we also need is to find a job. I've got a diploma in higher education. Employers look at my employment form, so-called two tick symbols, and they think, two bastard syndrome, we're not interviewing that. They are breaking the law. If they have a two tick symbol, and you have all the qualifications needed for that job, even more, they have to interview you by law. So if I can, I'm going to try and sue the NHS because they should have interviewed me by now. So you'll have to excuse me for being angry. And if anybody wants to order any books, I'll be around later. Hopefully. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay.
May I ask a question?
Yeah, can you come up to the actual... If you could sit down there and go back. If you have another... Can I ask you a question for that lady, perhaps the young for Alexis? You could perhaps come back to her later on. Is the question only for Alexis?
Yes.
Right, well, perhaps you need Alexis... Well, can I ask in that, if you talk to Alexis after the meeting, perhaps?
It depends really what the question is. It might be autism related.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, so if you could, okay, that's fine. Okay, okay. Well,
it's just that you mentioned Chris Peach. Chris Peach. Who is he, Larry?
Can you say his name clearly?
Peach as in the fruit.
Yes, Peach. Now, yes. It's important to know the name is classy.
Yeah,
and also, if I may say so, his status.
What does he do, Larry? Is he the...
I don't know if he's staff member.
So all the services works through the work of the National Autism Society. We're not actually... I think I...
Is he something like the chief executive?
He's not chief executive.
Is he CEO?
No.
Can I suggest... He's working on the campaign side. I'm sorry.
Can I suggest that people can do their own research... on this? His name is Chris Peach.
It's not a high.
Okay. Can I have the next... speaker, please.
Can I speak?
Yep.
I'd just like to say that we had a user representation meeting last week at the National Autistic Society. Hannah and Giovanna and myself were present. Now, Adrian himself gave, and one or two other people who are going to ease up for 4 minutes. And it's not to do with the point of making, but everybody wanted me to mention it. Yeah, there was a few of us there. I'll sit down. One of us, Robert Yoga, made a number of very important points, put up a number of posters of options of what we wanted to demand to be a parliamentary officer. One of them, I thought, was the most important because it postulated, why do we have somebody in government at a junior level who is responsible for the rights of the autistic? That's what we need. I think that if there was one thing I could campaign for, demand, but if there's one thing that's important, it's quite simply somebody low down in government, permanent role, some sort of disability officer, who I'm afraid that's what we're classified as. I think we're a genotype, a part of nature, like short people, gay people, ginger people, where we all have common characteristics. Why can't we be a race or a kind? Anyway, we should have, or should campaign for, is one individual, at least, who relates to our lives and our plights and can speak to government permanently on any issues, an interface through which we can communicate, probably via the NAS, because they recognise the NAS. So the more we talk to the NAS, and the NAS talks to individuals, the more we get to
sense.
Larry.
Then that is what we need. In that simple,
the end of the
I see nothing complicated about the concept. There's disability officers all over the place. Players have disability officers, gay, lesbian, like Stonewall, lobbying groups, having interviews with the Prime Minister, it's in the papers. I mean, 30, 40 years ago, black people, Indian people, those gay people, disabled people, generally per se, we have marvellous representative. In the future, why can't we have... So that's it. Thank you.
Thank you. thank you, Matt. Thank you.
It's not the NAS. Yeah.
Okay. Right, next speaker, please. Larry, please. You can sum up at the end, Larry. We have a couple of minutes left. Okay, I have the person nearest to me, yourself, so yeah, pass yourself. And then followed by the gentleman further back.
Hi. There's a thing called Aspect, but I think it's one of the major universities in the UK. I think it's Sheffield. And it's got a massive questionnaire for all people who are supposed to run this.
Sorry, sorry, can we not have a big dialogue here if you can make your point?
People they've asked, would it be a bad idea to get a lot of the groups that we mentioned here today to add to that list? So that they all fill the questionnaire in and increase their numbers so they have more of a voice?
Okay, could I have the... Sorry. Larry, please, I'm sorry. You can say all this at the end of the meeting. I have a few minutes at the end. All the speakers will.
Can I have...
Yeah.
Thank you, microphone?
Just over there. Just over there. Sit down. Just there. Just on that chair there.
Yeah, but I've been listening patiently and interest what you're saying. Now, two things I'm not clear about. Are you saying that medical intervention is always wrong? Because don't forget, sometimes autistic people have other difficulties like epilepsy or schizophrenia. So sometimes you've got to try and try doctors need to work on the person, as an autistic person, and try and cure the illness and try and cure the person. It's not entirely always society's fault. That's one point we're not always clear on. As for the internet, it's very useful for me because I keep bombarding all the green with emails by don't like his leaflets, which are very, very sweeping. Anyway, Adrian knows what I'm saying, people in this society, but emails aren't the perfect method of communication because when you email people, who don't know how to feel and so on. So it's very useful to speak on the phone, speak face to face, and don't want to get answers to your email.
I have no idea.
So the first question I'm more interested in, are you saying that medical intervention is always wrong?
The speakers can sum up.
Larry, at
the end of the meeting, you can sum up. Well, write it down.
I've lost the point.
Yeah, write it down.
Okay.
Well, I'm sorry.
Can I answer that point? I'm very confused in that point.
If you could very quickly answer that point.
No, I'm saying medical intervention when appropriate is not wrong. I'm not saying that. For instance, I will take painkillers for pain in my back. What I'm saying is we are not to be constructed wholly in a medical dimension, to be seen only as medical problem. We're not to have to rely on medical people to say whether we're entitled to services or not. We shouldn't have to go through medical gatekeepers all of the time. But I mean, that doesn't mean to say we should consult a doctor when we need one.
Okay.
It's like saying if you need a mechanic for your car, you consult a mechanic.
Okay. Does that answer your question, then? Okay. Who's up next? Yes, you over there. Yes, you still clear your thing, didn't you? Yes.
There's no
one for me. No, there isn't. No. Tell me.
First of all, I'd like to say that I very much appreciate that you've invited parents as well as people with the Asperger's syndrome to come along. What I wanted to say was, if that's all right with you, shut me up at once if it's not. We have had for a few years now meeting monthly at the National Autistic Society's offices in City Road, a meeting for parents in which we discuss our problems with our children. They're all adults, of course, but the neglected lot of the adults. and their needs and so on. And we can't do various things, of course, to help. But I would like to say, if there are any parents here who would like to know about our meetings, and it would be supporting, of course, everything you're doing, I'll be very pleased to talk to them when the meeting is over. And thank you very much.
No problem at all. Thank you for that. Okay, we've all got a, all got a picture now. Who's up next?
No, I wanted to say something against the NAS, yeah.
Until the end.
Because I've said something against the radar, and I wanted to say exactly the same thing to the NAS.
Can you actually leave that till the end of the meeting?
I'm My name's Adam Cook. I'm the chairperson of an organisation called Landscape Architects South East, which is the London and South East region of the Landscape Institute. And it's an organisation really that's about, it's about really a profession that deals with mixing of applied arts and natural sciences. And we carry out an analysis and design. In natural environments, when by that I mean public realm. My student lady is also here, Sarah Canton, has put a model to illustrate a proposal for a design in Town Square. And I thought it might be important to say a few things because as a designer, people who become chartered, once you're qualified as a full member of the Landscape Institute, the Code of Professional Conduct and Practice of Art Profession says that you should take into account the needs of users and those likely to be affected by your work. So it does rather mean that, you know, the issues like the has disability by the mistake in making London inclusive is a concern for the landscape architects particularly. I mean, I think one of the things I'd like to just close on saying is that what I have this gift being used in the context of people with different abilities, and it says that when you consider those who with different abilities, when you're designing, you make an inclusive design. And that's an important thing, and it's very current at the moment. There's a lot of guidelines coming from the governments about how design should be produced to make it more easier to use. And there's a lot of work still to be done. But when you don't do that, you don't make inclusive design. So it's a conscious process that designers have to learn. So thank you for listening.
Thank you for that. Thank you, Adam.
And there's a model to look at as well.
Yes, which is where exactly?
It's over there.
I think Sarah brought that actually, didn't you, Sarah?
Yeah.
That's right. And I think you and you have a sort of together. Yes.
Yeah.
That's fantastic. Yeah, there's a model of a building, a sort of construction, a fortified square, which is autistic friendly, like an autistic friendly space in Trafalgar Square. Yes, by all means, go ahead.
One of the reasons for doing the model and creating the design for Trafalgar Square was because it's a national icon. This is meetings about politics and autism. I feel that particularly a space in central London for people who have, because I know everybody's different, but some people have acute sensory problems, and there should be a space. And the people on the spectrum children, I mean in this instance because of my research I had to find down to children, should be represented in what is the centre of this country, you know, Trafalgar Square celebration, protest, and that children on the spectrum, whether they're wheelchair users or not, whatever, should be able to access fountains and pedestal of nurses, columns, selling stable body people who climb the lines as an act of defiance or an act of celebration. And that, you know, to create true equality, it's not just about religions, it's about spaces and between buildings. That's how we're going to make a fully inclusive society.
Thank you for that, Sarah.
Thank you.
Okay, who is next? I'd have a hand over there. I can't see you at all, apart from my hand. Yes?
I
Come over here. Take your place. Yes, just sit in front of it. You don't have to lean into it. You don't have to lean into it. Just relax.
Okay, my name is Liz Solomon. I was interested in what this man was saying about where do you draw the line between a diagnosis and the way that we just respond to the world and we learn? And I was also very interested in the film. I think that we should talk about that, because the way that woman was interacting with the world and the way she explained it, she certainly wasn't seeing it as a problem. That was her learning style, that was her experience of the world. And I think it's important to carry that message and not to just see a situation as a disability and to slot into that, whether it's a representative in Parliament or it's a space which is not just about the problems and the overload, but it's about how people reach out and then integrate back into their experience and then put that out and make connections, and that's going to be a shift for everybody in society, a different learning style. Over the last 7 years I've been involved in learning space, memory galleries for autistic and dyslexic people, where we make sculptures, which are like visual emails. They're layers of experience that people build up. There's kids, there's adults, and they all interact with these. The kids might kick them over, the adults might kick them over. It's part of the process. They get built up differently. It's about change. It's about people learning about change. If change is organic, it's not threatening. I've never seen anybody come to the garden and have be upset because the leaves of the trees have changed colour. That's an organic process, and people accept it. It's only when it's a hard wall which is on one plane that it becomes inaccessible to experience. And I think it's important to push across.
Got 1 minute.
To push across people's life experience as multifaceted, not just about disability, about how certain types of experience are prohibited in some way by society. Why that's the case? We need to study why that is the case, rather than have it going back on ourselves as a personal issue all the time. That's the way to make links, to actually study the people who are studying us.
Okay. Okay, can I have another? Yes, two over there. The young chap first. No, sorry, can I have Glyn first? Because he had it earlier on and didn't get to speak. Sorry about that. We'll come next.
First of all, I would like to thank David for turning the lights down. It's the first time anybody's ever done that for me, and it's been very grateful. When he mentioned eugenics, there is another thing which goes along with that, which is participatory research, where people have done research to prove a point. The point they prove is a point that they want to make. This has gone throughout history. They use these points for their own purpose, and quite often they are wrong. We should be fully aware of what goes on and what people are doing. The other most important thing is autistic spectrum and mental health, where if there's anything wrong with people autistic, they get put in the mental health system, a system that does not understand their autism, which actually makes them mentally ill, and rather than treating their primary condition, which is autism and helping them, they actually are making them chronically ill by the way they've been treated. And this has gone on and on, and really it needs to be got through to government or whatever for it to stop. I think I better stop because I'm losing my eye on here. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. Thanks, Bertie. Okay. We're on top of the red hair now.
Good morning, it's Leon Capella. I'm with students with disabilities represented at the university, and amongst other things, on a bee writer. I've got some points to make. Firstly, given one thing I've noticed from my research and various training on the board is that the active population along the autistic spectrum is very small compared to the number of people active compared to the number of autistic people in the UK. And now, given that there are about 545,000, and on one estimate of the autistic people and the statistic of active people on forums, the biggest one, Wrongpay, amounts to around, what, over 12,000. And there's a clear disparity. My point is, how do you make sure that the active autistic population have a strong mandate, either through open or tacit support from those who aren't necessarily interested? Secondly, how do you get people informed generally about what is going on? I mean, as a teenager, I didn't really know until my late teens about the whole disability debate. I'm still learning a lot of new stuff as a 21-year-old. And thirdly, one thing I noticed about the whole autism community is it exerts a lot of presence. What's it does, and that can and has successfully translated into potency, actual effect, saying that there is something wrong. But I've got a feeling this will not be sustainable without the concrete organisation in place to actively work within or directly into the institutions. So those are my points. Thank you very much for your time.
He's not clapping.
Well, thank you for that. Okay, we've got about another 10 minutes of discussion before we start sort of, or well, 5 minutes before the discussion before we sort of get the speakers to come back on point. There's just a few more minutes, so please be as brief as you can. Yes.
I go into the level sometimes, so I apologize if I don't speak so well. I just wanted to say that it's important to have a campaign at the political level and have ID changes legislation, but also we need to look at just getting information to the general public, because, for example, I have a lot of problems that I use public transport because I live in South Coast, but I work in London, and I get bullied very frequently. The most recently, I have my arm shut in a train door because I was speaking in civics, so I hate public transport, and apparently this was a problem for my fellow passengers. So, hey, well, push her and shove her on so it gets stuck in the door. And stuff like that happens on a pretty much daily basis. I tell the staff they don't care. I make sure the Disability Discrimination Act, they don't seem to know what I'm talking about. So I think we also need to make sure that just people who are doing the day-to-day things, members of the public, also are aware as well of what to do and what not to do, because having it on some piece of paper somewhere in Parliament is all good, but if the average person on the street doesn't know, then there's no point. And the public should get bullied and verbally abused in the street on a daily basis, so I really would like that to change, and I think it's important that we look at that as well as just looking straight at Parliament.
Yeah, but it's all part of the political process.
Thank you. One quick point in response to that. I've been given this as the autism alert card, which you might find helpful if you can get a hold of one of these, from the MAS. So if you actually give this to a person, to a member of staff or anything of that nature where you feel it's necessary, then that might help to actually ease your way a bit. Because it has an official-looking sort of thing. And if you go to the NAS and ask for one, I'm sure they'll be helpful.
That's £2.50.
Okay, well, that's £2.50. That's
a good investment. And then £10
to be a member of the
NAS. Okay. Right. Well, that. Yeah, okay, can I just
elaborate
on the card?
Okay. We don't have time. Okay. We've got two speakers left. That'll be the end of the discussion, I'm afraid. Yourself first, Robert, and then yourself there. I'm afraid it'll be the end of it after that.
Very quickly. There's a politician called Angela Browning, and she has fought to win autism in Parliament. She'll be retiring soon, unfortunately. I think that she's a parliamentarian for the area of Cornwall. I think she has an Asperger son. And the other thing is the South West coordinator of the National Autistic Society is a lady called Jane Vaughan, and she puts together South East. And she puts together the regional conference, and they want to do more for adults, and they're going to be doing that. I'm a volunteer for a charity called Danger that works with different conditions, Asperger's, dyspraxia, ADHD, and so on. And we're going to be doing something there as well with the National Autistic Society. So they're taking an interest in adults more, which I think is very good. Thank you.
Okay, I think we'll be the final speaker, but we've got to come back to a discussion then. But there may be time for a couple more, actually.
My name is Jean Bradbury, and what's triggered me wanting to say something since last exchange about the little blue wallet. If you read what it actually says, I'm not getting into anything about the organisation here, simply what that says. You read a description of what it is to be Asperger's. I showed it to a young friend of Asperger's. He took one look and said, it's not very flattering. I don't think that if you showed that to the fellow commuters, it would help them see you as an intelligent, responsible person with difficulties. But the reason I'm saying this is that we need to somehow get hold of the definitions of autism and Asperger's. We need to get hold of the way in which these things are communicated about. Obviously, this meeting feels that, but you know, the way that people want to represent it infuriates me. I'm sorry, I've gone completely off. I think you know what I'm trying to say.
Yeah.
We have to
write
our own definition.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely.
Okay, we have just about 2 or 3 minutes left, if I can call this thing to a halt. We have room for one more speaker only.
I just wanted to say something against the
end. You
will
have your chance.
I don't want to be a traitor.
Make one or two points. First of all, I mean, people who are autistic and have Asperger's syndrome, they're individualistic. They'd like to do things on their own. Certainly I do. I can't work with a team at all. Jobs now all geared towards teamwork, which is a problem. I can't work in young and others. I can't work with a team. I've got to do things on my own. Now, I think the government and the whole establishment should be aware of this. Especially nowadays, where teamwork seems to be very important. But I feel that individual achievements should be more encouraged of. Because I myself, I've written a book on my experiences, and I've written another 2 dollars book with an Asperger angle, and I also give talks on my own experiences and observations of autism and Asperger's. But you're going to feel that individualism ought to be more encouraged rather than this obsession with teamwork and these judgments need to happen now. But much more so now than any other time, I feel, for the Asperger's.
Okay, can somebody read out? Okay, well, we'll let her carry on, I think. Okay, could some...
Comment, not question.
Yeah, okay.
We're explaining ASD, so others the positive aspects before the negative ones.
Okay. Yeah, makes sense. Okay, we're going to come back to the speakers to actually come up and based on the discussion and whatever else they want to say. I want to bring in Larry Arnold first, just to make a few points of his own, and then we'll be going back to the time. Okay.
Well, just because I happen to be on the board of the NAS doesn't mean that I can't say things against the NAS and when I disagree with the NAS and when I think the NAS is not doing enough for us. For start off, there's only 10% of us on the NAS, so it's like asking the government to do something for us. They're not going to listen if there's only 10% of us there. They have a 40-year head start on us. Yes, that means they've got a lot of money, a lot of influence already. But the point is, we should use them, but not rely on them. We need to build an organisation to stand alongside them, to stand alongside and be as powerful, if not more powerful, as a voice than the NAS. It's our voice. We are the autistic people, and we should be making the representations to Parliament in Europe, everywhere else. We should not rely on these other organisations to do it, especially when they will tend to put us in a dependent relationship rather than a partnership relationship.
Thank you for that. Could I have...
rely on.
Okay. Are you happy to be last, Tyler? Can David go first?
Of course.
Yes, okay. David,
you can go first. First of all, I'll leave on the table some business cards with my email address on for those of you that want to get in contact, as I said before, either about the conference or about anything else. Don't be surprised if it takes a while to get a response sometimes, because I seem to get quite a few emails every day. It's a very good way of communication in some ways, but if you've got sort of the whole of London trying to email you, sometimes it takes a while to get around to it.
Rush hour.
Yeah, well, rush hour every day at the moment. But I just wanted to say that I think it's been a really good exchange. I think that Larry and everybody is right about taking control of definitions and identity. I think the history, I know the history of my relationship with many organisations over many years, from when I was institutionalised as a kid and used to get people from the Crippled Children's Society coming round to tell me or tell my parents what they should do with the hopeless cripple. I've reclaimed the word cripple. I think it's an interesting and powerful one when coming out of our mouths, not when it's coming out of the mouths of fascists. I recently, interestingly enough, we've in London we've got quite an ongoing debate about accessible transport. I think transport is very important, and if anybody has any problems with transport that we have control over, let me know, because we will take it very seriously in terms of the way that people behave and access needs. I know it's not perfect, but we've had a revolution in terms of particularly bus travel. And for somebody that's been excluded from public transport for many, many years, it was exhilarating to be in the crap space of a public bus. Somebody from America who was actually talking about Iraq started off a piece in The Guardian with an attack on the mayor's stance on the Route Master bus, which is the icon and symbol of an uninclusive city and society, an omnibus that doesn't allow everybody in, including disabled people and parents and older people and younger people and most everybody. I was actually at the on the day that the last route master went out of service, I was at Brixton Tramshed. I say this quite often, but it's important to me. And around the bus were these people that were wanting to retain the route master. I think mainly people that don't use buses, but like the idea of being on a bus. And in their eyes, I saw that hatred of me asserting my right to travel because I was taking their toy away. And it was a front line, and a real front line. But back to this article in The Guardian a few weeks ago. In the blog, I was looking through to see what comments there were on this attack on the mayor and his stance on Roomaster buses. And this blogger, I know it's around, but I was personally quite shocked that there was this piece which, I'll paraphrase it, so I can't remember the exact words, but said, yeah, I love the Roomaster bus. And by the way, you know, I used to come from a provincial place, now I live in London, and all I see is too many fucking cripples on the streets using the bus. Mm-hmm. I believe there should be a eugenic solution. And The Guardian allowed that to be there. We had to complain about it to get the webmaster to take it off. And that was a serious comment, which means that actually all of these discussions about identity are very, very important. And never, you know, I know from experience of organisations that it's only when we are in control of our own organisations and building alliances with people that understand that removing barriers mm-hmm. is the right thing to do, mm-hmm. but those that do not want to control us, that then we will have a powerful voice. And the organisation thing is a very important one, which is why we're all stressing, and I'm always stressing, that actually, if you want to find out about the real experience of discrimination, you need to talk to the people who are discriminated against, not those people that have an interest in the economy of our lives. Because, yes, there is an economy. We are part of an economy. There is great resources out there that are about moulding us and labelling us and treating us as special needs and this and that and the other. And actually, you know, if we were given resources, society would be much better, I believe. But anyway, I'll shut up. And again, take the card. Please do come to the conference. And please let me know about things that can be done. Particularly around here, you know, I know there are issues around lighting. And we're trying to do something about lighting. I'd like to talk to you later, actually, about that. Because many people simply aren't aware of the impact that the environment has. And it's only when environment changes that they realise the impact that changes can have. I know that sounds a bit stupid. But people accept something that's crap and only notice that it's better when it changes. Yeah, it's up to us to change it.
Thank you.
Oh, and they're changing the law,
they're making
more like
four
buses
as well, aren't they? No. Okay. No, what I mean is, going home tonight, can I actually just get on the bus and pay the guy without having a ticket beforehand?
Can you talk to ask David Morris after the meeting?
That's a practical issue, and I might be gone.
Organisation issue. Could you leave your badges on the seat or somewhere, because we need to recycle them.
Okay. Yeah, Diana, please.
Okay, I just want to say I think it's been a really useful meeting. I'm very honoured to have been asked to speak at it. I'm very sorry if I left people out. It's England, it's not the Europe. And I think we've all got the potential to change things.
Okay, thank you. Okay, one very quick thing. I did want to suggest that perhaps after this meeting, that if anybody is interested in doing so, that a small committee of volunteers be formed to organise future events following from this. Could I first of all have a show of hands if you're interested in that? I just thought we want to put a small committee of volunteers. Sorry, where's that noise coming from?
The microphone.
Right.
that
Yeah, sorry, could you put that down then, please?
Because no, it's not this. This isn't connected.
This is...
Not me.
Okay. I'm just saying, in a small committee of people who are interested in forming a committee based in London to actually organise future events. And I mean one that's totally capable of meeting rather than one, because I know that there's only people from all over the country could be here in this room, but I do want to admit that people can actually meet up in one place, have discussions and so forth. Because most of this stuff goes online, but I think it's useful to have a community that actually can actually meet each other. So, I mean, I'm interested. Can I show hands again to this one?
Okay. So you can speak to at the end.
Yeah, can we speak? Can we have a quick discussion at the end of this meeting? Okay, that's the end of the meeting.
Yes, I'm sure. I've seen Mary.
I just like to help people who don't know how to get there because I've had that.
I just want to know. How? I can't stop this thing there.
I can't
stop this damn...